gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio with the garden editor, Claire.
Tuesday means it is Garden Editor Day, and Claire is with us once again. Hiya, Claire. Are you okay?
Good morning. Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. And thanks for joining us again today.
Not a problem. I'm enjoying this. I know we're into October, and I know it's a kind of a time where you can feel like the year's sliding away and Christmas is coming and all those things, but it's just lovely weather at the moment. I really like it. I don't know about you. How are you finding the weather?
Well, yeah, I thought Sunday was quite warm, wasn't it? But apparently this week or next week it's going to get hot again, isn't it, or something? I don't know. Is that true?
Yep.
Or is that just wishful thinking? Ready for winter?
Well, I, as a gardener, I spend lots of my time looking at the weather forecast and planning what I'm doing and working out if there's, you know, good things to do or less good things to do. And next weekend looks like it's going to be 21 or 22 degrees again.
Wow.
Which is really bonkers, isn't it, for October?
Because you're a gardener, can't you predict the weather from certain plants? Can you do that?
I think seaweed, certainly. I think on the in the coast, I think people say that you can predict the weather through seaweed.
Yeah, they hang it out on the shed, didn't they?
Yeah.
I
tend to use an app. I have to say, I have 3 different apps because sometimes the weather forecast doesn't agree with itself.
No, so, that's right. Yeah. And, when you look at the app and it said it's currently raining for 3 minutes, you think, no, it ain't. The sun's out.
Yeah, indeed. And to be honest, at the moment, you know, we do get the odd downpour now and again. I think it was a couple of weeks ago, and a really, yeah, really wet and rainy days. This kind of nice warm weather, the soil is moist, it's a great time for planting. So I'm kind of cracking on and getting lots of plants in the ground so they can get their roots down before winter. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, 2 weeks ago we were speaking about bulbs, weren't we? Bulbs.
Blubs, indeed. Yeah,
so,
lovely blubs.
Today we're talking about grass, aren't we?
We are, and we're not going to talk about lawns because we that earlier in the year, if you remember. But we're going to talk about grasses more generally.
Okay.
And this is a bit inspired by, I think last time I was on, we were talking a bit about my trip to North America, where a lot of the gardens there use grasses to great effect because a lot of the grasses come from the prairies. They come from, you know, the big expanses that, you know, you remember from the westerns and things like that, these large savanna-style grasses. And so I thought it was worth talking about why we might want to use grasses in our gardens. And I should point out right from the start, I'm not talking about pampas grass here. I'm not talking about really, really big static grasses which take over the whole of your garden. And I'm not going to talk about bamboo either, because I don't know about you, but a lot of people are very nervous about bamboo.
We've got bamboo in our garden. It's horrible.
I was going to say, because there's two types. There's a clump-forming type, the Fargesias, and then the ones which are the runners. It sounds like you might have one which is doing a bit of a run on you.
It's massive. Honestly, it just goes out of control.
Yeah, and they put these underground rootlets which come up. I mean, where I used to live, I had bamboo coming up from 2 gardens down, you know, and the runners will just chase and chase and chase and chase. So, yeah, I always say with bamboos, either just get the clump forming, and even then you can plant them in pots just if you want to contain them. Sometimes they're brilliant if you want to cover a really large area quickly, but as you say, they can get quite thuggy.
Yeah, they do. Sorry, I was coughing then.
That's all right.
Because we got some at the back of our garden, and we also got some out the front, and it just grows. Mm. It grows really, all of a sudden, it just shoots up, and you think, I cut it down, but it shoots up again.
It does indeed. And that's what, I mean, it's similar to what we're going to be talking about because, you know, have you ever fed that bamboo? I bet not, you know, but it keeps on growing. So it's very different to some planters like roses, which need quite a lot of feeding and manure to get the best out of them.
Yeah.
But grasses like bamboo, you know, they do their own thing pretty minimally with minimal input from us. But the reason I thought it would be good to talk about grasses is because, as we've just been talking, our climate is changing. We're seeing longer, hotter autumns, really. We're seeing autumn as a season in its own right rather than, you know, mid-September, put everything in the garden away and we'll come out next spring.
Yeah.
And grasses are one of those plants which you get them in, you look after them, which we'll talk a bit about, over the winter they can give you a lot of architectural structure because they give you these big vertical heights, but they also look absolutely amazing once we hit those frosts and they kind of get tinged with the frost and the ice that sparks. So it's something where to avoid your garden looking flat in autumn and winter, they're great. But they're also really good in the spring and summer because you can plant other things round them or through them. They can help with screening. So if you're trying to block out or distract the eye from rather unsightly things, like if you have bins or a neighbour's house or something you want to kind of block out, using grasses can actually break up the outline and silhouette of things, which can actually help disguise them. And they're also really good for sound. So if you live near a busy road or something like that, sometimes a plant with a sound for the breeze rustling through it can actually really detract from other sounds you might not like. It's quite a cozy sound itself.
Yeah, okay. All right. So is bamboo part of the grass family then?
No, it's not. It's a slightly different part. But they are similar in that the reason why they grow up so tall is because they're wind pollinated. So they don't have the pretty flowers on them. So if you think about a lot of flowers and plants in our garden have big flowers because they're pollinated by insects.
Yeah.
So they're desperately trying to put their energy into producing very energy expensive flowers to encourage all the insects. Houses don't need to do that. Just grow up. So, you know, a bit like wheat or, you know, even corn, maize, those are all types of grasses.
Okay.
But the grasses we grow ornamentally, we have them in two basic types. The first type are deciduous ones, which and you might remember this from previous chats or even GCSEs back in the day. Deciduous, so plants which lose their leaves, so plants which die back in winter.
Mm-hmm.
And then evergreen grasses, so the ones which stay all year round, keeping their leaves, their very fine leaves, all the way through. And both of them you can get in a whole variety of heights, sizes and conditions. So although most grasses like sun, because, you know, they're from the prairies and they're from areas with a lot of sun, there's quite a few which are native to English woodlands and do well in shade as well. So things like warning klaxon, though, here we go for a bit of Latin, Deschampia sepetosa.
Right.
That's a nice one to
What's
say.
The English version of that then? Tall grass.
Yeah. native grass one. And then the other one, which is a good one, is Millinia, which is also another native grass, which is, you know, it's native to the UK and it grows in wetlands and also in part shade. And those are really good ones if you don't have necessarily full amounts of sun.
Yeah.
And you can get ones which grow completely vertically upright. There's one called Sky Racer, which does as it says on the tin. So it literally races up to the sky, can be 2 meters tall.
Wow.
And then there's some which kind of arch and kind of flow out like, I don't know, like a volcano.
Yeah.
So kind of do that thing which Miscanthus gives you, that kind of shape of a flowing fountain. And then some are very small, like Stipa tenuissima can be very, very small and very fluffy. And then Stipa gigantea, the clue's in the name. It's like a giant. So you can get a variety of grasses to suit the space that you have. And the reason why I like them is because I think of them as punctuation marks. So you can have them in groups beside your flowers, or you can even weave them like a river. I quite often think of them as a river going around and through your plants as well. So it kind of provides a bit of a link and continuity, as we were talking garden design world. So it kind of gives the eye something to rest on throughout your border.
Mm.
So it's a good way of getting your gardens looking quite nicely considered. And they last for ages. That's the other reason I like them. You don't need to do much. You've got one task a year to do to the grasses,
yeah,
which we'll run through. But, you know, they grow up, they stand upright, they have quite often little seed heads, and that's all you need to do. So unlike flowering plants, which might flower for, you know, a month or two, you know, once your grasses start in spring, they can go all the way through the year to give you something as a structure and architecture for the rest of your plants.
So those big grasses, then, do you cut them down like you would normal grass?
So, really good point. So there's two types of grasses, as I said, the deciduous grasses and the evergreen grasses. So the deciduous grasses, which are things like this millennia I've mentioned, what that means is come the end of winter, so February into March, you chop them down right to the base. You chop them all the way down, almost like to, like you would with a lawnmower. So, you know, 5 centimetres off the ground is fine.
Yeah.
And what that does is it frees up all the space for the new shoots to then shoot up and emerge. So you're acting like a really big deer or a really big, what kind of animals do you have in a North American prairie? Buffaloes.
Buffalo? Yeah. Or yeah. Do they have antelopes? No, not antelopes. I'm thinking something different. They're prairie dogs, though, don't they? Do they eat grass? They might do.
I don't know. I think they kind of probably eat more carrion, but buffalo. Do buffalo live off grass? Do you know? I don't know. Really
cows
hard.
Do, don't they? Cow. They might have some. Yeah. They might have some sort of cow type animal things.
Anyway, so what's it called? Ruminants. Anyway, so basically, what you're acting like in late winter, early spring, you're acting like a large herbivore, and you're just nibbling down the grass almost to the base of it. So then that gives a fresh amount of light so the new shoots can photosynthesize and shoot up. And that is literally the one task you have to do with those deciduous grasses a year. Just one haircut a year, and then that is it.
I think I need more than one haircut a year, because I'd have like I'd have massive long locks.
Oh, I know. Can you imagine? I have a fringe, so I have to keep nibbling back at that. Otherwise, I literally cannot see what I'm doing. But yeah, grasses, they're far more forgiving. So just once a year to do the deciduous grasses.
And where would you buy them grasses, them type of grasses? Because I've ever seen them or heard of them, really.
Yeah, you can see them in garden centres increasingly. Certainly in nurseries, you'll get them. Our nursery, we've got kind of like a bench just of grasses. So it's a bit like, buying, I don't know, a base note or buying a belt or a hat or gloves when you're going out clothes shopping, if you ever suffer that.
So when you're buying them, do you buy them in like sort of pre-grown plant form, or do you buy them in seed, like lawn seed? Is it the same as that or not? Or is that completely different?
You can do either. So you can either buy them as potted plants in containers like any other plant, and you just plant them straight in, dig a hole and put them in. You can grow a lot of them from seed, and a lot of them will kind of self-seed once their grasses have been pollinated. So you can do that as well. It's probably a little bit more work, but if you want to cover a large area, it's certainly...
No, buy the pots in if it's less work.
Yeah.
Buy the pots.
But then the other type of grasses are the evergreen grasses, and for those you don't even have to chop them down. What you tend to do is you give them a bit of a comb, you give them a bit of a hairdo, and about the same time of year, so in late winter, early spring, what you want to do is get out all the tatty old brown and grey bits of grass from your grass. And you can do this in a couple of ways. If the grass is soft, so it's not like one of these ones which is really sharp and will cut your fingers, you literally take your hand, possibly in some gloves, and you just comb your hand through the grass, and that will just remove all the dead, dyed material out of the way, and it will leave you with the fresh, strong growth, which is going to carry on and grow for the next year.
People are going to think I'm mad if I'm standing outside combing grass.
Oh, but trust me, it's, you know, you talk about mindfulness and well-being, combing grasses, it's a whole new level of enjoyment, I can tell you. It's very satisfying. It's very satisfying, you know. And people
Did you
can
say
think
something about grass that can cut you?
Yeah, so some grasses, you know, they have very sharp leaves.
All right.
And they can, some of them have quite sharp leaves, like miscanthus have very sharp edges. So if you're doing that and combing through those, I would always wear gloves.
All right.
Whereas some of the softer ones, like pheasant's tail grass, it's a much softer one. And that you can just literally use your fingertips without anything else. And if they're very large grasses, rather than using your hands, you can even use a rake, a bit like you'd use a comb. So you kind of get you get your rake into the centre, and you just kind of drag it back and through, and that can remove all the old dead stuff, and it just makes it look so much better. But again, that's the one task a year for grasses. They don't need any feeding. They don't particularly like rich soil, so you don't need to mulch them. You can chop them up and divide them if you want, if they're getting too big. But other than that, they will look after themselves in a really helpful and forgiving way.
And are they all the same? Are they all green in colour?
Well, quite often they start off green, but they can go a whole different set of colours. So some of them will go purple. Quite a few of them will go orange. in winter. So when they start to die back, they will go these really cool colours. One of the evergreen grasses, which is very popular, which is called Festucha glauca, is almost like a cool blue, like a steel grey, green, blue colour. That's really striking if you want to combine it with, you know, soft pinks or yellows. And if you put three of the Festucha glaucas in, they can look really, really funky and make it all like feel a bit like zingy colours rather than soft ones.
I just assumed when you're talking about grass, I've just got a picture of just green grass.
Yeah, yeah. And some of them are stripy. There's a zebra grass.
Is that those colours of those grass, are they natural colours or are they?
Yeah. They're bred for those colours, but they're not injected with dyes or anything like that. Right. They are literally, that's what it comes out on. So the blue-grey is because they're very drought-tolerant, so they're used to reflecting a lot of the sun rays back at the sun. So that kind of silvery-grey-blue colour helps do that. The grasses, which tend to turn orange and purple, it's because the chlorophyll, the green chlorophyll, by the end of autumn will be breaking down and the green drains out of the leaves. And what you're left with is the other products within the plant cells, which are have this kind of purple or orange or yellow tint. That's why when you see autumn leaves, that's why they're turning red or orange or yellow, depending on precisely what variety of tree they are. But it's all just the process of the chlorophyll draining out. But then you're left with some really quite warm autumnal colours as a result, but it's completely natural. It's science and nature. It's not us standing over them, injecting them with anything.
Yeah, well, that does sound fascinating because I just assumed grass was green. So wrapping it up then, what's your suggestion if people want to do some grass modelling? Should we call it grass modelling in the garden?
Absolutely.
What would be their best way to start off?
So I would start with a grass called Stipa tenuissima, which is very easy. It's fluffy, it's soft, and it's have just a really nice, easy grass, which doesn't grow too high, maybe 40 to 60 centimetres and about 30 centimetres wide. And get maybe three or five of them. Don't just get one because they can look a bit sad. It's a bit like, you know, imagine if you just had like a small patch of lawn, which
Billy was, no mates, isn't it?
You know, exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah. They just look better with friends. And just try either dotting them around and through other plants, and they just give a bit of height and waft. They're non-toxic, they're safe for your pets, they're safe for your children, they won't harm your fingers, they like it in full sun. They can take poor soils. So if, like the rest of us, like many of us living in Basingstoke, if we've got chalk and really, really hard land, they will do well in those circumstances. So that's what I would recommend. Stipa tenuissima, a lovely, easy to look after, entry, beginner-friendly grass, just to see what they might look like and how they might help elevate your garden to the next level.
And that model of grass is available locally, is it?
Yep, it is. I will put some links on, but yeah, we sell it at Hardy's. It's quite commonly available in lots of places, so you might find it in B&Q and others. It's one of the more popular ones because it's so easy to grow. Once you do get it growing, it can self-seed, so you can have other little babies come off it, which again, you can just whip out, or you can keep them if you think, okay, this is for me.
Absolutely. Right, well, thanks for talking to us today about grass. Before we go, we're going to need your song, but you're not back with us next week. You're back the week after, aren't you?
That's right. And we're properly getting really into autumnal weather then, aren't we? It'll be almost so I think I'll have a think about what we can talk about coming up to there. But, you know, that's proper like bonfire time. And we might talk a bit about garden care when we're going into kind of, you know, the real November-y time of year where, you know, we're talking about bonfires and leaves and how to look after your garden in a sustainable and, you know, nature-friendly way.
Yeah, okay, we'll do that. So before you go then, I just need to know what your song is for today. I've got an idea what it is, but I'm not going to say. I'm going to let you tell me.
Well, you know, I love a theme for a song. And I'm a child, you know, I spent a lot of my misspent youth was in the 90s. So my band for the week is Supergrass. And I thought, we're talking about grasses, and the one thing I really love about grasses is how they move in the breeze and the wind. So my track of the week this week, Dave, is Moving by Steepergrass.
And what a good song that is, and we're going to play it for you right now. Thanks for joining us today, Claire, and we'll speak to you in 2 weeks.
Thanks so much. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye.
Gardening tips on Basingstoke Community Radio.